GM friends, and welcome to another episode of Making Bank, a community podcast from the organization formerly known as Bankless DAO, where we explore the intersection of decentralization, community, and the future of work. Hi, I'm Drost. Today's show is another in my planned series of conversations about what we've learned over the past few years with DAOs, and brings together multiple perspectives for discussion on their rise, evolution, and sometimes dissolution. And now, my conversation with PhD researcher Meredith Lehman, developer and community builder Sean Gonzalez, DAO Space founder Jairus James, and DAO Plomats founder Jenga Jojo, as we examine the lessons learned and potential paths forward. Today, I've got joining me on the show, a roundtable, if you will, several folks that I've had a chance to interact with and a couple meet in person over the last couple of years. I'd like to first introduce Meredith Lehman. Meredith has a master's degree in organizational communication and has a background in teaching management and leadership. Currently, she's a PhD student in organizational behavior at the University of Colorado Boulder. Her research focuses on the changing landscape of work. She's been conducting qualitative research in the DAO space, which she believes is a critical and under-examined testing ground for innovation and people-centered governance, which brings her into our world. Her goal is to help improve scholars and organizations' understanding of DAOs from a micro-level, human perspective, as well as to explore broader challenges that may hinder DAOs' widespread adoption. She's also happy to hear from founders and contributors to DAOs. And so if you're interested in learning more or participating in Meredith's research, her LinkedIn, Telegram, and Discord handles will be in the show notes. So welcome, Meredith. Really happy to have you here today. We first met, I think, at Permissionless in Austin, if I'm not mistaken.
We did, yes. I met you IRL last fall, and that was delightful. And really happy to be here and be part of the conversation.
Cool. Thanks, Meredith. And next up, I'll bring up Jairus. Jairus James is the founder and lead developer of DAO Space, a discovery engine for DAOs. Jairus has over 3 years of experience in the Web3 and DAO space, and I met him at Bankless DAO a couple of years ago. Jairus is a data scientist, proficient in Python and SQL, and he has extensive experience in building and integrating AI-driven tools to enhance DAO governance and community engagement. Jairus is also the founder of what's now called the OSPN, the Open Source People's Network, which is a community that creates content highlighting open source tools in Web3. And additionally, Jairus is a delegate at the Rari Foundation and is a member of the GWG, which is the Governance Working Group at ApeCoin DAO. So super excited to have you here today as well.
Yeah, super excited to be here as well and to be here with these great guests as well on the roundtable. Yeah, just excited to talk more about DAOs and the opportunities that exist within these organizations as well.
Great. Thanks a lot, Jairus. Also joining us is Jenga Jojo. And Jenga Jojo is another individual I've had a chance to meet in person at ETH Denver and have worked with at Bankless DAO. And Jenga has been involved in DAOs full-time since 2021, and that's the year that Bankless DAO was formed. That was his first DAO experience. It was my first DAO experience as well. In 2022, he started DAOplomats as a professional organization working with clients, and they've been working with some of the top organizations in Web3. It's currently a team of five. They're decentralized, spanning the globe, and they are right now testing the waters with ENS as well as Shutter. So welcome, Jenga. Glad to have you here as well. I know it's getting late in your part of the world, so thanks for spending your evening with us. And is there anything you'd like to add to that?
All good, thanks.
All right. And the person that I recently became familiar with and Jairus has a prior relationship with is Philos. Philos Faro, his real name, Sean Gonzalez. He has a background in physics. He worked at Raytheon. He's been involved in a number of startups. He went independent in 2013, and he founded a DC group. You met your wife there. I think there's a fun story behind that. And then you moved to San Francisco with your wife. You're a developer and are involved with a new organization called SweetView, and formerly with Lobby3. Now, Lobby3 being a crypto-oriented pack. If anyone's familiar with Andrew Yang and the Yang Gang, that is a U.S. political candidacy in a different election cycle. And a lot of the learnings from that, Philos is trying to apply to his current work. and bring some of these concepts that we talk about in Web3 and crypto about decentralization, bringing power to the people, preventing plutocracy, all of those kinds of things really play into what Felis has been working on and is passionate about. Is that fairly accurate?
You did a great job. Super. There's always different ways of taking on these things. The community was Data Community DC. It was a nonprofit in DC. We used to reach 1,000 people in person every month. It was so much fun being a part of things like that. And I really love developer data science communities.
Thank you, Felis, for joining us today. Sometimes I think we do a little bit of navel gazing, and that's one of the reasons I'm really happy to have you and Meredith here. Jairus and Jenga and I have a lot of experience with Bankless DAO, and we may have formed some opinions there, or maybe a little too close to it to be objective. So I think this is a great opportunity for us to really step back and look at what some of these common challenges are. And Meredith, since you've been doing research on this, would you be interested in maybe kicking that off, one of your areas of inquiry that you think would apply to everyone?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I am in the process of qualitative research, which involves a number of interviews with DAO contributors and founders, including Felis. Thank you for taking the time to speak to me. And many others, most of whom are remaining anonymous. And that's been a great learning experience for me. Candidly, I do not have a lot of background in DAOs, so I've been doing this research for almost 2 years now. Before that, I was familiar with crypto, but not at all familiar with DAOs. So I've been learning a lot. It's been a great experience. What I have tried to bring to this research and what I'm bringing to papers that I'm in the process of writing about DAOs and related to DAOs is a broader idea of the changing world of work and how we can make work better and more sustainable for people while integrating principles and convictions that we care a lot about, things like decentralized decision-making, distribution of power, transparency, all these things that are really at the forefront within DAOs, but are obviously much more challenging in practice once you start to apply them. So I'm hoping to bring a lot of what's going on in DAOs, the good as well as the challenges, to a wider conversation around the changing world of work. That said, I'm mostly talking to people. It's a delight to be in a room like this because a lot of times when I'm talking to folks, it's the first step is explaining, okay, what is a DAO? And then explaining, okay, what is blockchain? What is crypto? Why does this still matter? So really nice to be in a conversation where everybody here is really an expert in this space and is building this space. And that's really exciting for me to listen and learn and be a part of it. In terms of where my research is going and questions that I would have and maybe ways to spark this conversation, I've been really interested in thinking about lifespan of DAOs, the organizations themselves, and lifespan of individuals within DAOs. And so thinking about what contributes to longevity, what contributes to sustainability, as well as the flip side of that, what contributes to transitions or exit or death, if we want to get dramatic. In terms of DAOs. So why do organizations end? Is there something to be said for intentional ephemerality, this idea that we can decide to end organizations in a way that is beneficial or advantageous to everybody? And then on the individual level, because my research really does focus pretty heavily on the individual level, what are the causes of burnout in DAOs? Why do people leave DAOs? On the flip side, why do they stay? Even if there are challenges, things like compensation, unpredictability, other sorts of life things that come up in terms of who can or can't contribute all of their time and energy and resources to DAOs, there are lots and lots of complicated reasons why folks might leave DAOs. Given all that, I'm really curious why people stay, why people continue in this space for years and start new projects and maintain that momentum. So that's broad outlines of what I'm interested in my research right now. Actually, I hope that they seem like obvious questions and challenges in the DAO space to those of you who are in this space all the time. But I would love to think about questions around burnout or questions around when and why DAOs end or when and why individuals within DAOs decide to maintain their commitments.
Thank you, Meredith. I think that's a really good framing. There's a lot of rich material to mine there. So does anyone have anything in that set of topics that really is resonating with you right now where you feel compelled to comment on it?
Yeah, I feel compelled to comment on the focus on burnout, because when you contribute to DAOs, especially if you have the intent to utilize DAOs in a way to earn a full-time income, then more than likely you're going to have to contribute to several DAOs in order to do so. You can certainly experience burnout that way. A way that I found to make it a bit easier to contribute to several organizations is to do something similar within each DAO. So at least you're not wearing too many hats, even though you're contributing to multiple organizations. But I feel like the reason why people do experience burnout in DAOs is because they have to contribute to so many of them in order to receive the compensation that they need in order to live. But it's still better than working, from my experience, speaking for myself, I'd rather contribute to several DAOs than like working an odd job or just doing something that I can qualify for with the degree that I graduated with. So I just find much more freedom working within DAOs, but you do have to contribute to quite a few in order to make ends meet.
I think that's been a challenge with a lot of folks in this area, is it almost feels like, I hate to say it, but just another variation of a gig economy. Having to work in a lot of different places to earn enough, that doesn't seem tenable either.
I mean, we're starting to go through the gray area, right? So we talk about DAOs as if they're an entirely new entity, and there's starting to become a relationship between typical startups, legal entities like LLCs or unincorporated nonprofit associations, or even more so than that. And so we talk about the gig economy, and you have to have multiple gigs in order to get along these days, unless you're lucky enough to have a stable position with a high salary. But more so than that, even if you have that, if we want to get ahead, we have to acquire assets. And a lot of times DAOs are providing those sorts of things in one format or another. But DAOs really aren't some separate entity, that they tend to use tooling that the traditional, we'll just call them boomer entities, don't use. And that makes them more DAOs than anything else. When you have to make a decision with people in the boomer entities, you would have to have a board meeting and bring everybody to a room. And now you're using DAO tools in order to hold that vote. But some of the same issues and cycles of people getting to know each other, learning from each other, starting something, the pains of trying to mature that thing, how long does it take, people start to burn out, all of that is still human and will always be.
When I was chatting with Meredith, I said, what are some of the through lines through this? And really one of them, and what you're alluding to, is the persistence of human messiness, right? We have this idealized structure we're trying to do, code as law, but then you've got people's idiosyncratic needs and desires, or just the human equation. You can't just remove the human from it. And we end up experiencing the same kinds of issues and challenges. So is it about tooling? How do you prevent, it seems to be these natural tendencies for power and money to concentrate, regardless of the agreements. An agreement is only as good as its enforceability. I think we chatted about that when we were doing some preparation too.
That's a huge one as to whether or not they're actually enforceable. You introduce yourself and it just requires that two people have some confidence that you're going to have a decent conversation. You start talking about DAOs. Have you put in any work yet? Once work starts being put in, and this is the area that I've really been interested in for a while now, and it's what I'm continuing to try to implement lessons learned from Lobby 3, is you may have boomer agreements in place that try to utilize the old school court system. One thing that my lawyer told me recently was that it was just too expensive to exercise that system. No self-respecting lawyer will go after a lot of DAOs, even if they have a few hundred thousand dollars in them. From a lawyer's point of view, that's not very much money when they're making $500 an hour. What other tools are there to enforce things? You can have multi-sigs and stuff like that, but a lot of this stuff is still pretty immature and really not set up for agreements between people as to what work is going to be done and when actions are in line with what everybody has agreed on.
Right. Jenka, I was thinking of you as Aphelos was talking about some of these agreements and enforcement of it. And do you have any delegated governance you've been involved with where some of these issues have come up.
I can speak more generally in terms of agreements. The Boomer orgs in this case are like orgs that are trying to use the legacy legal system in order to build ORIG as a use case of contracts on top of it. But the unlock that I see that DAOs bring is that now you can make orgs on top of smart contracts. The current version is somewhere in the middle where there is a smart multisig and then there is a legal structure somewhere and they're intermingling somehow. For me, that is not a true DAO, and B, there can be multiple versions of what a smart contract-driven organization can be, in the same way that there can be multiple versions of what a legal contract-driven organization can be. There can be single-person companies, there can be nonprofits, there can be for-profits, and yada, yada, yada. So, like, this specific structure that we are working with, which is democratic voting and the line of functioning in that thought process, we are essentially speedrunning the same models that democratic decision making has done with legacy structures. So in the experimentation that's going on now, we haven't actually unlocked what smart contract native democracy can look like. We're still playing around with old structures with new tools. When this unlock will come, that is a good question. And if it will come through existing players or a new player or someone completely new has to look at this from a fresh set of eyes and design a contract from scratch. Yeah, those are interesting topics to think about. However, I do think that as an industry, we are overly focused on this decentralized autonomous organization framework of what a smart contract-driven org should be and not at all experimenting with other forms of smart contract-driven orgs.
All right. Thanks, Jenga. I'm thinking of taking this in a couple of different directions, but before I do that, I just wanted to leave that open for anybody to touch on that or if to loop back.
I'm happy to comment on
the
mention that not a true DAO and stuff like that. To me, DAO is a little bit like Plato's pen. Plato talks about there's being the idealistic version of a thing, and it's in this other place, it's in your head, and you just are continuously striving to achieve or to manifest that thing in your mind's eye. And I don't know what it means to be a true DAO. I think what happens is that you go in and you've got some things solved, and you go to implement them, and then you go to do something else that you want, and you realize that the tools don't exist. And when the tools don't exist, you end up relying on words, and then you write down those words so that way you don't forget. And then you tell third person, hey, we've agreed to these rules, and if they end up doing something that is against those rules, you're going to come in and verify that it's against those rules. And how many of the things that we are agreeing to do here on this call are a result of a conversation that we had with somebody else who we want to maintain a relationship with in the future, right? So there's this constant back and forth about trying to automate and decentralize the natural rhythms of human interactions. But like Gödel would say, you know, any set of rules, there's something that can be done that can't be verified or contradicted by assumptions. There's always something outside of whatever you try to set up, and that's going to forever be the race. And in a way, DAOs are really just an extension of the administration of those old school organizations. But I'm really curious as to what Jenga Jojo has to say about what some of these other tools that are coming down the pipe are, how they can facilitate these agreements or other DAO operations, because it's really fascinating what we're able to automate.
Maybe you can elaborate a bit on some of the tooling that you're referring to. And also from the perspective of what a true DAO is, as you say, right, it's always five steps ahead of where you think you have to be or something. But I do think if an org is not reliant on the legacy legal structure, then that is as close to a true DAO as it gets for me.
everybody's focused at first on the movement of the funds. And that's where the multi-sig came along. And there's great tools for that. Then you have Raid Guild has a smart contract where you put the money in escrow. And if both parties agree, then the money is released. And if not, LexDAO has been working on some sort of automated mediation that happens in some sort of decentralized way with their legal network. These are all relatively new ideas, and I haven't seen them work at scale. They've worked for small projects. We use them at Lobby 3 to manage the contractors, but the agreement that's in place is still very much human and written down. I'm not quite sure, like, could you have an AI that looks at the language between everybody and determines that what they've delivered is not what was requested? I don't know, but that's another step that could be taken.
This kind of brings in what Jairus is working on and probably has some input on, which is integrating some AI tools to facilitate more things with DAO governance and community engagement. That just reminds me that we had tried out a couple of different tools integrated into the BDAO Discord server, where it was pulling from our constitution documents and you could actually query it and return answers to how we facilitate within our constitution or pulling out data from previous meetings. We were experimenting with a couple of tools like that. And I don't know, Jairus, if you were involved in that at all or if you're familiar with what I'm talking about.
No, it sounds very interesting, but I wasn't involved with the creation of those tools, or I haven't actually used them myself. But it seems as if in order for them to create a tool in which you can communicate with the Bankless-DAO constitution, then they added the constitution to the data set and then fine-tuned like an existing large language model in order to query it. That, or they could use like a API, like a ChatGPT API, that will perform some SQL commands to manipulate the data, like actually be able to access that data and then basically provide an answer based off that information before it provides an answer to the person that provided the initial prompt. But yeah, that's pretty cool. I didn't know that that a tool like that existed within Bankless-DAO. What was the name of it again?
I think it was called Helix or something like that. I have to go back and look. I know Chris Beal, NFThinker, was involved with bringing them in. Oh, and then there was DAOlens. Vikram, he's the founder of DAOlens, which is another one of these tools in this space. And they had incorporated an AI assistant in that to be able to providing some alternatives to things like discourse, you know, forum.bankless.community or whatever. The DAOs tend to be using that to do polls and discussion and so on. And they had incorporated a similar tooling. We never incorporated that, but they were wanting to work with us.
I remember those days. Ways in which I use AI currently with DAO information, particularly forum data, is to make the information accessible for people, make it easy to understand. There's a lot of proposals that come through to different DAOs, like ApeCoin, for an example. And it could be like a very lengthy proposal. If you copy and paste it, put it in a Word document, it'll be like around 5 pages. And so when people have to make these informed decisions, especially if they're a delegate and they're going to vote on this particular proposal, it would be very helpful for them to be able to easily digest the information. And so what I'm currently doing for like summarizing proposals, and then you can go on the Optimism forum and you'll see posts made by DAO Space, and we summarize every single topic that goes on each week within Optimism. And the way it works, I scrape the data first and I put that in a SQLite database. And then I will create a script that uses the ChatGPT API in order to connect to that database. And then I tell it to look for the date column, like the created date for each topic. And then it's able to identify all of the topics created for a certain amount of time, like within a week's time. And then it views the actual content of each post, that original post from that discussion. And then it summarizes it. It uses ChatGPT to summarize it, give it like a one paragraph concise summary so you understand the gist of what it's about. And then to take it a step further, also created another script that allows you to generate a bio based off of every single author in that DAO. So if you've ever written a post before in a DAO, it will do a SQL command, like looking for all of the posts made by that particular author. And then it comes up with a summary based off of everything they said. For an example, let's say somebody did like an introduction post on a particular DAO's discourse, and they talked about who they are, what skills they have, then that will be a part of their bio. So I'm working on generating automated bios for each member of a DAO. So then you can also use this information for a targeted search for a person. So let's say you want to discover you're a content creator, Joe. So let's say you need to work with a video editor or a graphic designer or something like that to help you market these. You can look up a skill like graphic designer, and then you can see everyone that ever referred to themselves as a graphic designer and just discover who those people are from any DAO in the space. What I'm working on is just making it easy to discover key things within the DAO space, as well as opportunities, any working group opportunities that exist so that you can know about them first, like even before they go up for a proposal, and then just match it with users based off of things that they're interested in or things that will be convenient for them. So that's what I'm currently working on personally, but definitely keen to know about more AI tools within the DAO space. I think AI is going to be very important for DAO governance going forward, especially to put the A in DAO, to make DAOs more autonomous. It would make sense to use more autonomous tools and AI agents as well.
Yeah, and a couple of things that pop out to me on that is we already know that participation in governance is really low, right? And how do we increase participation? You need to make it easier for people to digest this information and hopefully not have a hallucinating AI giving them bad summaries. And, you know, if you're training on your own data, that should help with that. The other piece that popped into my head is something Aphelos had brought up in a prior conversation, which is, what are people saying and claiming they're doing in forum posts versus how they're actually voting and acting in real life, right? That's something that Aphelos, I remember you and I had chatted about. And so then that brings up reputation and attestation and that kind of thing. So if somebody's saying, look, I have this skill set, okay, great. I don't want to find out the hard way and bring you on board for 3 or 6 months and find out that it was just a bunch of bullshit, that you're interested in it, but you don't know anything about it. How do we get proof of skill, proof of work, a different kind of proof of work than we're typically talking about in this space? But really, do people know how to do this stuff? Are they efficient at it? Who are their references? And then how do you validate that? Somebody develops a bad reputation for whatever reason. Maybe there's animosity in the organization. They somehow get these bad marks on them, like an episode of Black Mirror or something. And suddenly your social credibility goes down and you can't get a job anywhere. Those couple of things did pop into my head. Is that something that's of interest? Aphelos, did you want to touch on that or segue here into some related topics?
Yeah, this is where the human side of it and the existing startup ecosystem atmosphere is directly applicable. Whether it's a DAO or an LLC or an S Corp or B Corp or whatever it is that you come up with your structure. And some would say that a DAO is really just a better administrative system for some existing legal structures. But I think, as Jenga Jojo was hinting at, that there's new ones that might need to be written. But regardless of that, it's still people. And you get introduced. How do I know everybody here? I met Jaris through Bankless DAO, but also through some introductions while I was at Lobby 3. Dros, you were there at the Bankless DAO thing. I said some words. You're like, hey, I like those words. I want to introduce you to Meredith. Meredith is like, hey, your words fit with my PhD work. What if I've been lying this entire time, right? How would anybody know? And so the way that I combat that is I try to be as open and public as possible. But that is contrary to the way a lot of people are. They want to be private. And it's this interesting balance. You can only have so many meetings a week. You can only talk so much. And so you get to know each other and you're like, okay, we're going to do this podcast and how do we do it right? And we more or less agree to have just human values in a lot of cases about we're going to follow through on the things that we say and respond to people when they write to us. But as time goes on, you find out what people's capacity are, or maybe things just change. And that's just the natural course of things. But eventually, if you keep going down that rabbit hole, you're putting real assets at stake. And those assets, typically when you talk about that, you're thinking about a physical asset, a house, Bitcoin, something that is retaining some sort of value. But I mean assets as well that has to do with that scaffolding of the network you're building in order to build something more permanent. And that can be just the attention of time. It can be maybe the contribution of some real assets, but the time and then the sunk cost that goes along with that. You start working on a thing, and can that thing exist outside of that ecosystem? You know, in the same way that you are alive and the cells in your arm are alive, if you take the cells from your body, outside of your body, they don't survive. These ideas, a lot of times, they exist only in the ecosystem of the people that you agreed to have this kind of relationship with and take the risk of putting the time in. Because if the situation changes, if that scaffolding is compromised, the whole thing can collapse, and then the work that you're doing ends up being for naught. You don't necessarily have to be a bad actor in order to facilitate that happening. You might very well be thinking, hey, I tried this. It's not for me. I'm going to move on. But then you may not realize just what your role was in propping this thing up, and the other people involved could lose a lot as a result of that. And you can cause material harm as a result of that. Those things are extremely difficult to prove. How do you prove that you didn't get something? It's extremely difficult to do. The human element of learning about each other and understanding each other is really useful. And what you mentioned, Black Mirror, I mean, that's the fear, right? Is that you're going to have some incredibly superficial system. And I think in a lot of ways, we currently have that with the existing credit system. That credit system is not useful to me in knowing who I should spend my time with and why, who I should try to invest things with. All it really tells me is that if you give them a loan, there's a certain risk, which translates into an interest rate. So what's the reputation system? What does it look like? So that way, when I get involved with somebody, I know that what we're talking about is going to become a product. Does this person have any product experience? Do they have any of the skills necessary in order to do that? Do they have the desire to put in the time to do that? Have they ever put in time into a project of that sort? Have they ever been a part of an organization? Have they defaulted on agreements before from other people? Is that information public, or is it just somebody complaining that they didn't get what they want? You know, all of these things I wish I could somehow look at in a way where I'm also happy to share myself. I'm more willing than the average bear to just 8-mile it and stick the good and the bad out there. And if somebody doesn't like me, I just raise my eyebrow and whatever. You don't have to like me. But it's very reasonable that a lot of people don't want to do that, because we have culture in place where blemishes, quote unquote, on your record create this negative atmosphere, which then stops the further development of those human relationships. But at the same time, if you don't have them, you might be developing a superficial relationship. Somebody might just be a scenester who likes talking about these things, but won't actually do anything. And then you're forced to learn the hard way. There's a bit of a ramble, but that's what I get at.
I see Meredith unmuted. Go ahead, Meredith.
Oh, sure. I was going to speak to the idea of attestation and reputation and trying to build something that feels reliable and objective in a sense, while still capturing that human subjectivity of what it's actually like to work with and rely on a person is so, so tricky. And obviously something that traditional organizations have struggled with for a long time in terms of assessing performance and balancing things like soft skills with objective performance measures. I hope there is, because what I hear folks discussing here is trying to get at core characteristics of the human beings that you're trying to work with and rely on in a way that goes well beyond what organizations do or can do, right? If you apply to a job, you submit a resume, you start fresh and hopefully you do okay. And the reason they do that is that they can fire you at any time, and it's a very different system. But the idea of trying to get a more holistic sense of who people are that can carry and be transferable from context to context while still being fair and true is, I think, a really interesting opportunity space. Not one that we've necessarily solved yet, it sounds, but I'm really intrigued by it. So that's what catches me from that conversation.
Jenga and Jarrus, you've been quiet there for a while. Jarrus, you were talking about the opportunity to work in different organizations and preventing burnout, trying to use the same skill set across the organizations. And some of these things that have been brought up, how does that resonate with you, if at all? You put in time and effort, and then through no fault of your own, all that time and effort you spent is a sunk cost that you're never going to get back. And is there any evidence that you did the work of something that no longer exists? And does it matter?
Yeah, what we're talking about right now, it resonates closely to what I was mentioning about contributing to multiple DAOs and burnout, and then not necessarily getting compensated from a particular DAO, even if they have promised to pay you. So at the very least, like having some proof of work in the sense of like an achievement badge, like some type of, maybe it's an 1155, maybe it's a soulbound token would make more sense. So you don't, like an achievement shouldn't be transferable, but at least you can have some history of what you've done that can be recognized across the DAO space. So at least it's tied to your wallet address, it's tied to your digital identity. So someone can at least see that you're capable of doing the task that you're particularly looking to do at another organization. Like if you worked on a marketing campaign from another DAO, and even if you didn't get compensated from them, at least you can prove in another organization that you're capable of doing the work. And then this becomes like a verifiable resume. Now they don't have to take your word for it. Now it becomes a verifiable proof. I guess it just depends on like who you receive the achievement badge from. But as long as it's a reputable organization, at least they can verify that you're able to do what you say that you can do. And then I just don't think like when it comes to these types of badges that DAOs can potentially give out in terms of reputation, I would prefer for them to not give out negative related badges to them. Like an achievement badge is one thing if you can do the work and prove that you can do it. But like when you brought up Black Mirror and then harnessing somebody's social credit, I don't think that would be ideal. Let's say if you're playing a game like, because I look at working in a DAO as much as I like to compare it to contributing to a guild, like an online gaming community. You can tell how good somebody is in a particular game based on how many achievement or trophies, rather, in PlayStation, we call them trophies, that they've earned for a particular game. You can see how far they have progressed and whatnot. Let's say you're not a good player at the game. You don't get the negative version of a trophy, or you don't get a negative badge associated to you. Like if you're playing a game like Red Dead Redemption and you get an achievement for X amount of headshots or something like that, you get an achievement badge for that. But if you keep failing missions over and over again, there's no type of badge tied to your account that says that you're a terrible player or anything like that. I would prefer for it to stay along the lines of just you get a badge once you've done something great, but not necessarily tie something negative, especially tie a negative soulbound token to that particular wallet. Perhaps they just don't get any badge for that time. But I don't know, some people may argue and see the need for negative related badges to know to avoid certain people. But then that goes deeply into that whole Black Mirror concept, though. Just because you created a negative experience for someone within Web3 or for an organization, because with a lot of the data that I sift through DAOs, like especially as I'm writing SQL commands and Python code to identify certain things, I have seen a lot of issues in certain DAOs, like Decentraland, for an example, where there's a lot of tension in some of the posts within their forum. And I created a script that can identify the most heated conversations in the DAO. And then there's one name that stands out more than others that like constantly being called out for negative connotations. And I know who that person is, but most of the times my interactions with them on Twitter Spaces have been very positive. So the DAO has talked about banning this particular member at least twice on forum. But if they went as far as to like give that person a scarlet letter type of thing to their digital reputation, I just don't think it would send a good message through this space. That part's a bit scary. But I do see the need for having your achievements tied to your wallet address so that people can easily identify talent.
I'm really intrigued by the idea of only positive attestations. I hadn't thought about it that way, Jairus. That's really interesting. I also think that anytime you're introducing any kind of negative attestations, you risk the wrong incentives, right? You may incentivize people to be inoffensive as possible and as unobtrusive as possible, and maybe not to take risks for fear of failure or for fear of making a bad impression. So I think that's really worthwhile to consider.
You don't want to be negative. Being negative doesn't help with when you're trying to build something. And YouTube does this, that you can't see the number of negative comments on a post, except that one of the ways I used to try to filter my videos was what was the negative to positive ratio. And if it was very controversial, the ratio was generally 1-to-1, just as much negative as positive. But a lot of times you would get something that was 100x more positive than negative, and it was predictable what the comments were going to be like on that YouTube post. And they got rid of that because they want to be able to push certain content, and they don't want people to see that everybody doesn't like this content because it's the advertiser's content, and they can't sell advertising space if people don't like it, right? They'll be like, hey, everybody has this negative view of our product now. I mean, you know, sometimes you need to know about people's past. Sometimes it's negative, and I'm not really sure what to say about it.
Yeah, I hear you. But I mean, it's one of those challenging areas, right? One of the things I wanted to lead into is getting to real world stuff. And so Felix has a lot of good background on Lobby 3, some of the stuff they had built internally. There was something called, I think it was DVox, that was meant to help facilitate people having a say. They had a funding mechanism that was an NFT that was also governance. That's something we've experienced at Bankless DAO. Similarly, I'm wanting to cover some of those topics and really dig into some of those real experiences. And Aphilos, you had a lot to say about Lobby 3 and it's morphing into Open Civics and stuff. And so it feels like that's some real world meat about some of these topics we've been generally discussing. Does that make sense?
It does.
Is that something you want to do?
I absolutely do. A big part of why I'm doing this is for there to be lessons learned all around. I think that it's not really helpful to most people to pretend as if something went okay when it absolutely did not. But there's also good things that came out of it. But this has to do with that scaffold collapse. Lobby 3 was supporting DVox. DVox is supposed to be software that helped administer Lobby 3. And we had challenges with the membership and the directors and with Andrew Yang and Zach Grauman and leadership. They ultimately decided that they didn't really want to do it anymore. The attention to governance, you know, you get some dedicated people, and there was like a good dozen or so people that were dedicated that we were friends with. They were pretty much willing to support whatever direction we wanted to go in, but that was taken advantage of. I put together an agreement to try and have DVox move over to Open Civics, but once they had the chance, they just closed up shop, moved the money over in direct violation of the UNA and the agreement that we had. The lawyer and I that I ended up hiring in order to try and enforce the UNA, we have a strategy going forward to still try to recover some of the funds. But for me, it's not so much about that money. I mean, money's nice, but people justify things to themselves all the time. And so when somebody does do something, what mechanisms do you have in place to do something? And in some cases, you have none. If they're international, there's really no international legal body that deals with this stuff. If they're in the United States, there's some recourses that you have, but the US legal system is not designed for small business. Let's just leave it at that for the moment. You can suddenly find yourself having that scaffold collapse that we've discussed before. I'll leave it at that.
You'd mentioned before about not wanting to look to the past too much because you want to be moving forward. But by the same token, we can learn from the past. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to have Meredith in this conversation, because Meredith, you've talked with people from multiple organizations and not just in DAOs, because your research is overall in the future of work and those things we talked about in the intro, but that DAOs are a component of that. And learning from these failures, I think that's something that I wanted to key in on, because frankly, I have a visceral personal involvement with this space, and specifically the organization formerly known as Bankless DAO. I mean, I put in a lot of time and energy there and met a lot of great people, have made friends through it. We're talking here today because of it. But, you know, what's going to happen to the organization? It still exists. We're trying to find our way and maneuver through a difficult time and emerge through the other end being, it'll be something different. We're trying to figure out what all those things are that brought us together and still keep us together, and how we can make it be meaningful for people. But these are some of the same issues. What happens when an organization fails? Does all that work just go up in smoke? Is it a complete waste of time? What's your opportunity cost? Have you maintained relationships through it? Lobby 3, you had real legal issues there that had to be resolved with attorneys in the real world, and that has morphed into something else. Bankless DAO, on the other hand, we don't have any legal entity. We never did. In fact, there's discussion right now about whether we want to have a legal entity or not. I wouldn't say it's evenly split, but there's a lot of ambivalence about it, because it brings up all these other issues about jurisdiction and who's responsible and who do you document, because you have to have somebody on the paperwork, and all of those things come up. And then how do you fund the organization? Are you paying people in stables? Are you paying them in some token that represents participation or governance rights or whatever? I mean, these are all questions that are coming up everywhere. And we see failed DAOs out there, or orgs that have just disbanded or ghosted themselves, really. And despite the problems and challenges we've had with whatever Bankless DAO, BDAO becomes, we're still here. And when I've polled people, when I've seen people at events, they still view Bankless DAO as being one of the most successful ones out there. And I have a hard time reconciling that, because I don't know how you define success, because by many measures, it's been a failure. Yet we continue to persist, and people are donating their time to try and transition to something new. And so I think those are valuable conversations to have. But these are common problems, is what I'm saying. And how do we move forward from that? How we structure it? Hell if I know. Is DAO a stupid term? Do we need to stop using that term? Where do you actually decentralize? Does it make sense to do it up front or later or not at all?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of, is DAO a silly term? It's that Plato's pen, that thing to strive for, decentralized, autonomous, and you're organized. And a lot of DAOs seem to be just trying to adhere to the first two parts and not figuring that will create the third part, right? If you're decentralized and autonomous, then you must be organized. But I've been listening to the Bankless DAO conversations, and I don't think everybody knows what they want to be. I think that there's still some assets. I haven't tried to keep track really of what assets are available where, but it seems like there's some assets available, and that is bringing people to the table, because what do we do with those assets? And you want to be organized around what to do with those assets. But in terms of what the organization does, when it was Bankless DAO, it was ostensibly associated with the podcast and the idea of everybody ditching the existing banking system. But if it's not bankless, then what is it? And without that, there's an infinite number of ways to organize. And so that means there's basically none. You have to choose something that you want to accomplish together, some agreed version of success.
Yes. There's been a lot of conversations around that, from what type of legal structure you use, and frankly, what are those commonalities that we're still interested in pursuing, and can we afford to do it? Was it just a temporary experiment? And then you have jurisdiction issues, right? Some of these other conversations we've been having that are really U.S. focused, maybe conceptually it can apply, but can you implement those things globally? I want to come out of this with some actionables. Jairus, whether it's the organization you're working with, Jenga with your stuff, Meredith getting some more people to interview, That's what I'd like to ask, actually, Jenga and Jairus, probably Philos as well, I would imagine, have some folks that would be potentially useful for that research, not necessarily as a part of the pod, although it could be, but really for meritus academic research, if you're interested. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
I appreciate you, Drost, and looking out for my research interests. I'm definitely happy to chat with folks at some other time if they have ideas for folks I think I should speak to. I agree with the idea beyond just my research needs. I agree with the idea of trying to take away some sort of actionable learnings for DAOs. Something that I hear in this conversation, the point that Drost, I don't know if it was you or Philos who was talking about how we define, maybe Jenga, who was talking about how we define success and what that means. Traditional orgs tend to define success by default as lasting a long time and share prices going up, right? Do we have the opportunity to define it totally differently in DAOs? From what I have seen, the default tends to be leaning back on traditional definitions of success and mapping that on to sort of boomer, as Jenga said, boomer startups. I don't know if there's a better way to do that, but I do see also a lot of, if Bankless DAO were to fully collapse tomorrow and never exist in any form at all going forward, you would still see so much dissemination of the learnings and expertise and passion from Bankless dispersed throughout the ecosystem. And to me, that feels like a form of success that I hear some DAO contributors sort of leaning on and thinking about as a different kind of definition.
You bring up a good point there that we assume that these things have to exist in perpetuity. And I think sometimes that ends up why organizations, there's actually a term for that, but organizations just continue to exist because they exist. I think that happens a lot in bureaucracy and government and stuff. And an agency is created or some work product exists in some back room somewhere. It's got some budget that, why are we even doing this? I don't know. People even forgot it. It was still there, but yet it's a zombie organization. That's it.
Zombie organization. Right. And do we want to be embracing that kind of default inertia? I kind of don't think so.
Maybe the whole thing is the creation destruction and emphasizing the destruction, but accomplishing something along the way, not just for its own sake. But
right. And if destruction is where we head and where we assume that most projects will end, how do we find responsible ways to steward people's, all the resources they put into this, all the time and energy and passion that they pour into these projects? How do we steward that appropriately and reward that, compensate that appropriately? It's not something we're doing. I say we, I am mostly an outside observer, but it's not something we're doing all that well at this point, from what I can tell.
Yeah, the compensation point like repeatedly comes along in DAOs, and I think it's like a cyclical problem more than DAOs being stingy, because like most any org that does not have a stable revenue source cannot compensate anyone. And in order to have that stable revenue source, you need a dedicated team who ships product consistently. To have that dedicated team, you need resources in terms of money to pay these people so that they can build. In legacy structures, there is a startup that gets funded, and maybe some DAOs do start that way as a startup that gets funded. But then most startups that have some sort of a product, they either launch a DAO too soon, or in the case of 2021, like there was no product, it was just a meme coin. And as soon as liquidity dries up, it goes to zero. So no one got compensated. So A, the problem is circular, like no revenue, no product, no product, no revenue. But then it's also that maybe people are launching DAOs too soon without a product. And then there is a third maybe angle to this, like Bankless DAO, where there was no product, but all these people were working for free anyway. And how is it possible to sustain this sort of a dynamic? It is possible through interesting tokenomics, through a strong market maker defending that bank to USDC swap or something along those lines. But again, all these models have not been explored or experimented with. What we know is that a product needs to drive revenue to a treasury. As long as that's happening, even though many parts of the organization may be actually much worse than legacy organizations, the DAO experiment still survives. And Maker is a fantastic example of this.
But Meredith's work is what brought us together. And I'm not saying that Bankless DAO needs to go into that direction or anything like that, but I think her work and providing this conversation needs to support that work, right? Because I want to be able to say, if you want to understand what went on at Lobby 3, and I want to be able to point to Meredith's work and maybe something else, right? But are there specific questions and information that would allow for her to come to conclusions that would support her thesis? Is there new information that we can bring to bear? Can we help with maybe a direction? Because, and I'm sure I'm getting something wrong here, Meredith, but focusing on why they close or why they fail or why they end or anything like that, maybe it can be a little bit more about the life cycle. And I only say this because we've talked about the negativity and don't necessarily want to be negative. But in the end, what is exactly the thesis of your work, Meredith, and how can we support it?
So I really appreciate that, Aphelous. I will say that I view in this conversation and any subsequent conversations, I've really been viewing my role as more like supportive to Drost and supportive to thinking about Bankless DAO's general sort of interesting vision questions. So although I'm always on the back burner doing research questions, I don't see this as primarily about me and my research. That said, I think that whatever academic paper, product, dissertation is going to come out of this is going to be multiple years in the making. That's not a timeline that's particularly helpful to the DAO community. What I could see happening is, and I can't make any promises about timeline, but what I could see happening on a shorter timeline is writing up some kind of blog posty kind of set of learnings that might be more helpful to folks in this space, kind of distinct from my academic work, which is much more esoteric, and it will probably be at least 2 years before anything is finished or published just based on academic timelines. So I wouldn't get too concerned about whether you're helping me push that particular portion forward. If there are ways that I can be helpful and frame some of this from a mostly outside perspective, maybe in some sort of write-up. And I don't want to get super specific about like DAOs. Lobby 3 has a very distinct story. I'm not a journalist. I don't feel equipped to be the source of truth on this story. That said, I'm very happy to learn from these things and probably would love to write up something that's more informal around some of these questions at some point, if that would be more helpful to folks in the DAO space than my academic thesis 2 or 3 years from now.
I mean, putting together the blog posts is good, of course, and I'm glad that we get to do that together. I guess I am curious from your point of view, even as time goes on, even if it takes 2 years, I keep thinking about what are the things that people should look out for, depending on what they're trying to do. If all they're doing is having a conversation and trying to ape in and get on a coin and get some alpha, that's one thing. If you're looking to build something, though, what is it that you should look for in that organization? It would be wonderful if there was some more scalable way other than aping in, getting to know people, reading about the conversations, and then putting time in and then having that time be valued or not in order to know whether or not it was worth getting involved in the first place. It's just my perspective, but it'd be really cool if something came out of your work that allowed people in the future to know that they were expecting too much of an organization.
And I definitely see from all these conversations, I definitely see the value in what you're talking about, Aphelous. Yeah, people are putting a lot in and not necessarily getting what they've expected or what was promised. A caveat I tell people a lot is that I'm not a consultant. I'm a social scientist, so I can't promise to solve any problems or come up with concrete solutions. I'm here to observe and learn and try to put this together into something that kind of makes sense. But I don't want to overpromise what I can do in terms of, as a researcher, finding the solutions. In fact, a lot of people who are on this call or folks I've spoken to are much better qualified to actually come up with solutions as people who have been building this space for a long time than I am.
Right on.
Yeah, I hate to just take all that work and shred it and put it down the memory hole, if you want to use a 1984 reference. I want something useful to come out of it. And I also want to offer a place for people to go. Part of the narrative that seems to be out there is that bankless DAO is dead, long live bankless DAO. Or then we talk about the perception that crypto, Web3, blockchain is just either a scam or a technology looking for a problem. I just want to be able to continue the conversation and not have things just die. Have a place for people to go, put some closure on the old BDAO and old Lobby 3, whatever those things were. And really, more specifically, once we get out from behind our screens, facilitating in real life stuff. There have been a number of, not just this group, but among some other folks that are really recognizing that a big part of what they gained through the last couple of years was making connections with other humans. And so how do we further facilitate that connection in a meaningful way where you're not getting rugged by scenesters? The people I hang out with, we're here because we want to build something. We think these concepts are important. All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining today. Cenk, I know it's late for you. Jairus, I know you had to duck out.
Sounds great. Thanks,
everyone. Okay. Have a good evening, Cenk. And thanks again, Meredith, for your participation today. And of course, Jairus and Afilos. And that's where we're left off. While it may be a wrap on this episode, our exploration of DAOs, human coordination, and organizational evolution is ongoing. If you found value in this discussion, please share it with others. You can find links to our guest projects and social media in the show notes. This has been Making Bank. Until next time, keep building and stay curious, friends.